This is Dylan FM, a Freak Music Club podcast. I'm Bob Dylan. If you love Dylan, you're in the right place. This season, we're going deep on Time Out of Mind to celebrate its 25th anniversary. Here's your host, Craig Danieloff.
As I read through most of Rollins' writing, an unmistakable pattern of borrowed lines that were used in Time Out of Mind songs emerged. They turn up in at least 8 of the album's 11 songs. And this
Time Out of Mind is an inflection point for Dylan in many ways. One is, it's the first album where his use of references from old folk and blues songs and other texts went from general to specific. Dylan has always nodded at or quoted a wide range of literature, movies, songs, and people in his work, from the Bible to old blues to Hollywood movies. We're used to hearing lines that have the ring of the familiar within Dylan songs. But with Time Out of Mind, the style, sourcing, volume, and the way in which these references are made has changed. They're more verbatim. They're often combined and collaged together in new ways. There are repeated references from a single source. And they're no longer just a few words out of dozens of lines. This is a very different kind of writing from Bob Dylan. Some call it cut and paste, although that might not be entirely fair. But it may be the technique that Dylan was referring to when he told Ed Bradley that he couldn't write songs like It's All Right Ma anymore, but he could, quote, do other things. Scott Warmoth is one of the main reasons we know much of this. Many Dylan scholars were able to pick up on quotes from old blues or ballad lyrics, but Scott and a few others helped the world to understand and appreciate Dylan's use of text from a range of authors that few people would have noticed or recognized. For a big picture view of Scott's background and technique, I recommend an interview he did on the Bobcats podcast. Also good is a conversation he had on the Man and God and Law podcast. I'll link to both in the show notes. But we asked Scott to focus deeply on Time Out of Mind, which he did in a presentation given to our premium members recently and in some Q&A that followed.
Yeah, it was in 2009 when I realized that I needed to reconsider Bob Dylan's writing strategies on Time Out of Mind. For a couple of years, my friend Ed Cook and I had been trading notes on the various source materials that Dylan used when crafting Chronicles Volume 1. And by that point, we had cataloged hundreds of quotations from dozens of sources. It would have been valuable enough just to have a list of books that Bob Dylan had likely been reading, but often he uses these borrowed bits in such a way that a deliberateness became obvious, and this suggested a hidden subtext in some instances. Dylan's songwriting from this period displays similar strategies, but I'd really seen this as beginning with Love and Theft from 2001. What Ed sent me and later posted on his blog showed Dylan using bits and chronicles from the writing of Henry Rollins, a man of many talents, but best known for his tenure as the lead singer of the group Black Flag. The similarities were unmistakable and convincing. Now, Ed had pinpointed the passages appearing in a collection called The Portable Henry Rollins, which happened to be searchable in Google Books at the time. And I noticed that the passage in question originally appears in a book by Rollins called Black Coffee Blues. So I bought a copy on the off chance that there might be more there. And as I read the book, I discovered that just a few pages away from the passage that Ed had spotted was some distinctive language that appears in the Time Out of Mind song, Million Miles. On page 107, Rollins writes, "I fell into my room. Got away from the streets and the noise. I'm looking at the walls. They look good to me right now. Slowly, I am forgetting them and their mind-polluting words. I don't know how to handle praise. I feel like a con man when I stand there and take it from them. I feel like a commercial. I do it all wrong. I don't know what right is, but I know that I am doing it all wrong. I love dreamless sleep. Dreams tell me too much. Sometimes the less I know, the better. The more I look, the more I see." This passage was certainly a spark for the lines, "Well, there's voices in the night trying to be heard. I'm sitting here listening to every mind-polluting word, and I'm drifting in and out of dreamless sleep, throwing all my memories in a ditch so deep.
There's voices in the night trying to be heard. I'm just sitting here listening to every mind-polluting word. I don't care if people..."
Another, perhaps even more intriguing spark appears in the book where Rollins writes about writing a song like Million Miles. He writes, "The next song I wrote about was the distance I felt when I thought about that girl. The song centered on the lines, the closer I get, the farther away I feel. As I read through most of Rollins' writing, an unmistakable pattern of borrowed lines that were used in Time Out of Mind songs emerged. They turn up in at least 8 of the album's 11 songs, and this pattern extends into 4 of the songs in Love and Theft, the Telltale Signs entry in the Bootleg series, as well as the Academy Award-winning song Things Have Changed. Besides Black Coffee Blues, other titles that Rollins that Dylan appears to have read include Pissing in the Gene Pool, Art to Choke Hearts, High Adventure in the Great Outdoors, See a Grown Man Cry, and Now Watch Him Die, making 6 books in total. Much of the content of these books is dark, dealing with alienation, loneliness, the grind of being on the road, and coping with post-traumatic stress. These themes transfer onto Time Out of Mind and play a role in the darkness of so many of those songs. The land that Time Out of Mind inhabits is in those books. One example occurs in the song Can't Wait. Dylan sings, "I'd like to think I could control myself, but it isn't true." In Now Watch Him Die, on pages 66 and 67, Rollins writes, "If I allowed myself to care about you, I would hang myself up again. Like I've done so many times before, when I lost self-control. I would like to think that I can control myself at all times, but it just isn't true." A shout out to Dylan fan Tim Swadling, who recently pointed out to me another line from Can't Wait that appears to have roots in the writing of Henry Rollins. He suggests that a passage on page 99 of See a Grown Man Cry contains a line that shows up in the last verse of the song. Rollins writes, "I never thought I'd have record company hassles. You know, the story where the guy hates his label and moans about how they're fucking him and his music up, and you want to tell him to shut up and get a life. I thought that somehow I would be spared this fate." I'd been looking at that book on and off for over 10 years and hadn't recognized that particular similarity. I had noticed that on page 96, just a few pages away, Rollins writes, "The light in this place is really bad," which happens to be the first line of Dreaming of You. And that line also turns up in Standing in the Doorway, reworked into The Light in This Place is So Bad. On page 89, another line that appears in Dreaming of You, "For years they had me locked in a cage," is the very first line at the top of the page, making it easy to spot with even a casual flip through the book. Highlands contains a rhyme construction that appears to be crafted out of 2 different bits from Rollins. Dylan sings, "I think what I need might be a full-length leather coat. Somebody just asked me if I'm registered to vote." In a road diary entry in Now Watch Him Die that appears on page 146, Rollins writes, "Some Nation of Islam guys were here tonight. They were an intense crew, to say the least. Immaculately dressed with bow ties and full-length leather coats." A passage in Art to Choke Hearts reads, "I was walking into the Lucky Mart on Lincoln Boulevard in Santa Monica the other day. This guy is out front with a clipboard. He comes up to me and says, 'Are you registered to vote?'" This type of deliberate couplet crafting is used throughout Love and Theft and seems to have gotten its start here. One Love and Theft couplet functions as a callback to Dylan's use of the writing of Henry Rollins on Time Out of Mind, specifically around the line, There's voices in the night trying to be heard. I'm sitting here listening to every mind-polluting word. Dylan returns to Rollins and the theme of voices in the night trying to be heard in Lonesome Day Blues. It's a comparative literature presentation disguised as a blues couplet. Dylan sings, "Last night the wind was whispering something. I was trying to make out what it was. I tell myself something's coming, but it never does." The first part of that line is based off of a passage from The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Twain writes, "The stars were shining and the leaves rustled in the woods ever so mournful. And I heard an owl away off hoo-hooing about somebody that was dead, and a whippoorwill and a dog crying about somebody that was going to die. And the wind was whispering something to me, and I couldn't make out what it was. And so it made the cold shivers run over me." Dylan builds the rhyming line out of a passage where Rollins also writes about listening to the voices of the night. In Artichoke Hearts, Rollins writes, "I tell myself something's coming. I don't know what, but it's coming, but it never does. And I knew that it wouldn't in the first place, but I like to think that something's coming, and that something's coming makes me feel like living a little more. Sometimes I don't feel like that at all." And he goes on and on and on through there about, "If any of the noises are supposed to be telling me something, I listen intently. I don't want to miss the right one." So you can see how he's pairing those pieces, essentially saying, "Hey, pair." Remember when I was did that line in On Time Out of Mind? Yeah, I'm really still thinking about Henry Rollins, and you can compare him to Huckleberry Finn, which is an incredible way to write. In Highlands, Dylan sings, "I see people in the park, forgetting their troubles and woes. They're drinking and dancing, wearing bright colored clothes. All the young men with their young women looking so good. Well, I'd trade places with any of them in a minute if I could." And there's a striking parallel in High Adventure in the Great Outdoors from page 50. Rollins writes, "I was running on the strand down near the Hermosa Beach Pier. It was a clear day. Everybody was outside. I saw all these people in shorts and bikinis, having beers, playing volleyball on the sand, running around, laughing, calling out to each other, cooking hamburgers on hibachis, playing ZZ Top, fooling around on skateboards, beautiful girls, all tanned and slim, smiling and talking with guys, people getting drunk, talking loud and laughing like a bunch of hyenas. Must have been nice to have been part of it. I saw this guy walking down the street with this girl. They were both smiling. They were holding hands. You know, she was one of those blondes, and she had these nice clothes on, and they were laughing and talking, just walking down the street, probably going to eat dinner and then go to a movie or play. I would have traded places with the guy in a second."
I see people in the park, forget the troubles and the woes. They're drinking and they're dancing, wearing bright colored clothes. All the young men with all the young women looking so good. Trade places with any of them in a minute, only if I could.
Trying to Get to Heaven is an excellent song to examine, not only for an additional example of Dylan using the writing of Henry Rollins, but also to observe other songwriting strategies that Dylan has in play. Dylan sings, "When you think you've lost everything, you can always lose a little more," which is worlds away from "when you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose." In High Adventure in the Great Outdoors, 4 pages away from that story of wanting to trade places with people on the beach, Rollins writes, "The cowards of the world come to me for pro tips. I'm the king of fools with nothing to prove and everything to lose. Now, if you think you lost it all, you're wrong. You can always lose a little more." Something that caught the eye of several writers on Time Out of Mind is Dylan's use of lines from spirituals in Trying to Get to Heaven. Clinton Halen gets near the zone when he writes, quote, "He rediscovered the spirituals which had been infusing his songwriting soul since he was a 19-year-old Guthrie wannabe." Both Halen and the always astute Andrew Muir point to Elizabeth Cotton's Shake Sugaree in connection to the "I been to Sugar Town, I shook the sugar down" line. Muir does concede, quote, that it is only one of many potential references, and mentions the appearance of the song "Miss Mary Jane" in the Alan Lomax collection, "The Folk Songs of North America," as a likely source for the lines, "I was riding in a buggy with Miss Mary Jane. Miss Mary Jane got a house in Baltimore." Musicologist Mike Daly nails it when he points out that you can find 5 different lines that appear in Trying to Get to Heaven within pages of each other in the book, The Folk Songs of North America. The songs in the collection are numbered, and the ones in question are 248, 252, 255, 259, and 266. The first 4 are in a section on spirituals. The final 2 are from a section on wheels. Miss Mary Jane is song 259. Song 266 is Buckeye Rabbit. And a verse in that song goes, "I wanted sugar very much. I went to Sugar Town. I climbed up that sugar tree and I shook that sugar down. With that in mind, Buckeye Rabbit trumps Shake Sugary as a potential reference and helps lock down that Lomax book as a resource that Dylan was riffing on. Dylan does a similar thing in Mississippi, where he uses bits from two songs that appear in the Rosie section of the Songs from Southern Chain Gangs chapter of another Lomax collection called American Ballads and Folk Songs. And Mississippi also happens to include lines found in the writing of Rollins. A third strategy in trying to get to heaven revolves around the country duo Johnny and Jack. Dylan sings, "Every day your memory grows dimmer. It doesn't haunt me like it did before." In their song, "What About You," Johnny and Jack sing, "Every day your memory grows dimmer. Clouds drift away, sunshine peeps through. Every night, no longer you'll haunt me. My conscience is clear. What about you?"
Every day your memory grows dimmer. It doesn't haunt me like it did before.
And Dylan returns to Johnny and Jack on "Love and Theft," using music from the recording of Uncle John's bongos as the musical template for Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And Dylan returns to "What About You" again when he revises a couplet in the Tempest song "Pay in Blood" to "I've been through hell, what good did it do? My conscience is clear, what about you?" Within one "Time Out of Mind" song, if you look closely enough, you can see Dylan demonstrate how he was reading Henry Rollins, flipping through an Alan Lomax book, and likely listening to a Johnny and Jack box set. This deliberate patchwork method, which explodes on "Love and Theft," "Chronicles Volume 1," and "The Script to Mast and Anonymous," isn't readily apparent on previous albums, such as "Under the Red Sky" or "Oh Mercy." While the film dialogue used as lines in some songs from the 80s has been noted, I think it's different from what's seen on "Time Out of Mind," in that with "Time Out of Mind," there's a marked increase in borrowed lines, as well as this couplet crafting using outside sources. And I'm certain that there's more to be found. For example, Jochen Markhorst, who will be participating in this series, posted a piece on the Untold Dylan website just a few weeks ago. And he notes my suggestion that the first line of the song "Dreamin' of You" is one of many instances of Dylan taking inspiration from the writing of Henry Rollins. And Markhorst suggests that the line "I'm expecting to wake up from a dream" from the first verse of "Dreamin' of You" also has roots in Rollins. He points to a passage that appears on page 65 of "Now Watch Him Die." Rollins writes, "In semi-darkness, I think about my friend. In a few days, it'll be a year since his death. I remember when it was a week. I sat behind the desk of the office space I was living in, and I was amazed at how unreal the entire week had been. I kept expecting to wake up from it like a dream." When I retrieved that book from the Rollins section of my library, I noticed that that page already had a dog ear, but the passage Markhorst is discussing wasn't highlighted. I then saw that the other side of the page, page 66, has that "I would like to think that I could control myself at all times, but it just isn't true" line that turns up in "Can't Wait" that I had spotted a decade earlier. It's a shining example that there's still work to do when it comes to recognizing and appreciating Bob Dylan's writing strategies during the "Time Out of Mind" era.
I guess my first question is, I'd like to have you, who've thought about this for a long time, both characterize the process and tell us, how does it impact the way you listen to Dylan?
The notion of writing songs, he talks about the box. I mean, that's come up in a bunch of interviews where he puts pieces into a box, takes them out, and pieces them together. Larry Charles talks about that specifically, that there's a literal box filled with napkins and pieces of stationery from all over the world, and that they use that when they're making writing the script for Mast and Anonymous. I think we see that starting to begin here, where he's, especially with when Telltale Signs came out, you can see songs that were building blocks that didn't maybe make the cut for Time Out of Mind, or that were cannibalized in parts. I think there's notions that these parts can move around. Dreamin' of You, I think, is an excellent example in that you can see sections of it turning up in songs that do make it onto there. So they can intermingle for that. So I think he's got those components where he's got some ideas that he likes, things that he's considering, and how is he going to make them fit there. So I think there's some of that going on. I think there's also, especially as we move into Love and Theft, this notion of how do I make these pair together, where he's really stacking them, lines that have different meanings, creating components out of them. That full-length leather coats, registered to vote piece, like that's an interesting way to write. He's going through, those are in different books, but I think the likelihood of them both doing that independently is low, considering how much material from Rollins shows up. So I think he's absorbing material, and it comes out in a lot of different ways. What is he reading? What is he listening to? And he takes notes. Is he writing down the pieces from the book and putting in the box? Is he cutting out the page? I think visually, if you get some of the books, you can go through and piece that together. Oh, this one is easy to spot. This line, that's the last line, that's a key line in Mississippi, appears halfway through the page and the rest of the page is blank. Your eye is going to be drawn to that. Sometimes you can see, oh, your eye would be drawn to that if you've got the right volume that he's looking at. So I think there's a lot of that going on where he's got a pool of ideas, a pool of lines that he likes that he's going to riff off of. I mean, the stuff that came out of the Lomax book, I think Mike Daly's suggestion is dead on. He's probably just flipping through, hey, let me go back to the roots. Let me look at some of this stuff. And there's all these different components that, oh, that line jumps out. Oh, that's a cool piece. And just grabbing those magpie style. It's a shiny bit here, a shiny bit there. And then putting into something cohesive that you don't even need to know that any of that's going on for those songs to function. But it gives them extra mojo, I think.
Have any drafts yet of these later period songs? I know there was a Not Dark Yet lyric that has come out of the archives, but it'd be interesting to see the version sequences as the song evolves against this technique versus the much older songs where theoretically this process wasn't being used. In other words, you can see if there's drop-ins of a phrase that you found.
You know, I looked carefully at that Not Dark Yet draft when that images got posted. I didn't see anything that jumped out at me as I went through that. What I can see in some of the Love and Theft drafts for By and By, is there's one that's included in some of the lyric books. And there are bits there from songs that are really obscure country songs that you'd have to know the particular box that he was listening to be able to spot that didn't make the cut or that moved into something else. So in the blues, they talk about floating lines, like lines that are so common, they turn up all over the place. And I think he's crafting his own floating lines. These are bits that I want to use that I can move back and forth into some pieces. So I haven't seen Time Out of Mind drafts. So I certainly would like to, because I think it'll show that this is certainly the process that he's using and as he revises, and especially the songs that didn't make the cut, or there were like Mississippi was written during the Time Out of Mind era, but didn't come out until Love and Theft. He's got all of those components moving around. So, and that it stretches through time, that he's still returning to that Johnny and Jack song post the release of Tempest, when he's had it in his mind and it's been churning around since the mid 90s. So it's this long-term piece where I guess things that stick to him that resonate with him. And I think we'll see that in the drafts. I just need a chance to get into Tulsa, get my hands on them and dive in. But I bet that'll show up.
And how does the understanding of this process and all the things underneath it impact how you listen to Dylan? And what do you think others should take from the awareness of him using this process?
You know, I liked those records before I knew any of this was going on. Love and Theft, and then Time Out of Mind, and I love those songs. So many of those songs on Time Out of Mind, so powerful. And for me, they were great. It's a great album to listen to when I'm driving from Albuquerque to Santa Fe, and then Santa Fe back home. So I get to hear Highlands as the sun's going down, and I'm returning to Albuquerque. But then to think that he's doing all these other components, it just is brilliance as a writer. This notion of how does he absorb all this stuff? He's a sponge who reads things, but I think there's certainly some times where it's just, oh, that's something that's going to stick in your brain. It comes up unconsciously for it, but that he's doing it consciously and doing it with intent. Like, who is the audience for that? You know, I guess if I'm finding a lot of these things, perhaps I'm part of that audience, which is just wonderful. I like that he's thinking that deeply, that he's, how do these things work together, and how can you make something that's got some power to it? It just is a testament to how do you become an excellent writer, you know, decades into your writing career, and to make it function. I think it's just spectacular. How does it impact the way I listen to it? You know, I I've got a broader range of material that I'm familiar with. So I can hear those songs and I know that, oh, this line's from here, this line's from there. But I don't really listen with footnotes a lot of the time. I can, and I know what they are, but I can certainly just listen to the songs on their own for that. And I think that's a great way to listen to them. But there's all this other stuff there. And and to ignore it, I think is not productive. I think it needs to be examined to take a look at and see what's going on. And even, you know, some of these Rollins stuff that we're talking about, Ed Cook and I were discussing back in 2009. It's still a decade plus later. And in the past few months, I've had a couple of people come to me and say, hey, I took a close look at those books that you talked about, those Henry Rollins books, that I'm seeing things that you might not have noticed. So I think having extra sets of eyes can really help illuminate even more of what he was up to and how he was putting it together, which I just find endlessly fascinating.
So speculation, obviously, but do you think he intends people to know and to be able to apply the influence and contextualize this?
You know, it's hard to say. Sometimes he does actions that you can see where he's laid groundwork for you to know. I don't know that he might have envisioned the launch of a powerful resource like Google Books, where you can put in a phrase and you might get some stuff back out from it. So I don't know that he would have intended it to happen as quickly as it did. There's an interview where he talked about people will still be trying to figure out what I was doing 100 years from now, but the technology jumped on that. So I think, but the technology can only go so far. And I think there's still plenty going on that we don't see, just because the pieces are harder to find, or that maybe they were tweaked just a little bit for that. Even with the case of the Rollins books, those books were self-published. He has his own publishing company. And one thing I noticed is that, he'd done different editions. I first bought a copy of his book, Art to Choke Hearts, at one of his shows in New York City in the late 80s. And it got lost somewhere along the way when I moved to Albuquerque. When I got another version of it, I noticed, well, this is different. It's the first version I had was in all capital letters. He's reset it. And then, so it's different. And then he combined some of the books. So into twofers. So Art to Choke Hearts and Pissing in the Gene Pool are combined into one volume. But when he did that, he consolidated them a little bit, and there are bits that aren't there, bits that he didn't think maybe represented what he wanted to do, or didn't have the page count, or whatever it was. Sometimes the bits that he dropped, that Rollins dropped, were the bits that shined for Dylan. So you may not be able to spot them. And Rollins even consolidated his books down further. There's a collection called The First Five, which is his first five books, but they're truncated down a little bit more. So I think there's a need to figure out which editions was he looking at, that there are multiple editions, and the Henry Rollins bibliography is a mess in terms of trying to, how many versions of this book exist. It's not like they were published by big publishing houses. There's a paperback and a hardcover. There's multiple paperbacks. There's compressed versions. So there's still a lot of moving parts there. And because many of those books were published in small quantities, and Rollins' fame has grown and people are more interested in his books, if you try to find them in the secondary market, very often you're looking at over $100 for some of those earlier volumes. And I don't know if people are going to have the willingness or the pocketbook to fully put together that. So I think there's stuff there that we haven't figured out.
Cut and paste is a technique that has existed for a long time. I'm not sure that's how you characterize this. Are there other modern songwriters who use this? I know you spoke on the Man, God, and Law podcast about a couple of recent examples that you found of people trying to mimic it. But as a substantial part of what they do, are there other songwriters that you've come to know are working in a similar way?
Yeah, on that other podcast, I talked about Ben Harper seeming to use that technique and trying to take some bits from Chronicles. You can read interviews with David Bowie where he's writing songs like that and just cutting lines out and layering them together. But I don't know that we see anyone using it to this extent over this long a period, or certainly as successfully. I mean, you can try to take apart other people's songs. I haven't found anything close to that. A few examples here and there. I think some of the Bowie stuff that works that way. And how do you get those juices flowing for that? And then not only just the cut and paste, but the cut and paste with intent. So it's like the example I pointed out, it's here's hey, this line is just a blues line in a blues song on an album, but it's also, hey, let's compare the writing of Mark Twain and Henry Rollins, both talking about trying to listen to voices in the night and what are they saying to you? That's, or he's pairing high culture and low culture. He's got a line from a Baudelaire poem paired with a line from a Blind Willie McTell song, where he's thinking about those pieces and how do they fit together in a way that suggests an intent of making a meaning behind that, the cut and paste. Not 100% of the time. Sometimes I think it's just a nice sound and words group that appeals to him. But he's certainly taking some time and figuring out how to put those pieces together, sometimes to maybe say something else that wouldn't be easily spotted.
And the scope is kind of amazing. What's the total number of sources you've identified that have had influence?
It's plenty. On my Pinterest page that I put together called the Bob Dylan Bookshelf, which is comprised entirely of books that I suggest that Dylan has used material from directly in his work, whether it's the movie script, chronicles, songs, interviews, is over 100 books. And we're also talking about some of these are short story collections. So it's a whole lot of Jack London short stories or Ernest Hemingway short stories. Sometimes it's magazines. There's a couple of issues of Time magazine, one in particular that's used again and again in Chronicles Volume 1. So it's a big pile of books for sure. And he's clearly a voracious reader and listener as well. Like the music that he's listening to is going to rub off. So some of that just happens to be what was in the mix at the time he was writing songs or just collecting info, you know, keeping an ear out, you know, watching movies and writing down the line of film dialogue. Or, you know, is he highlighting the books or is he cutting out the pages or writing them? Whatever he's doing, he's collecting those. But it's vast. In Chronicles alone, there are hundreds of times that he does this. It's got to be, it's not a shortcut. It's not an easy way to write. It's a difficult way to write, especially to make it look seamless most of the time. That, you know, when Chronicles came out, it got rave reviews for being forthright when it's filled with secrets and it's a treasure map in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's one of the important things. I know you think, you know, there's people who try to turn this into a negative or some sort of sideshow, when in fact, it on one hand can just be interesting and kind of revealing. There's the potential for the impact in terms of what he might be suggesting, or if you go read things or exposed to things you might not be otherwise, and you can have those weigh in on the way you think about it. But primarily, it just seems another fascinating thing about Dylan, and ultimately has to be impressive. Because as he said in the interview where he addresses this directly, you know, you go try to cut 10 books apart and come up with something of this caliber, it's just not going to happen.
Indeed. And I think, you know, for it, especially with Time Out of Mind, finding that first there was that one piece from Rollins and I was like, oh, game on. I it opened it all up for me. And that there's mind polluting words and dreamless sleep within a paragraph is just too peculiar. Then it's three pages away from the section that I know is in Chronicles. I knew I had to go and look through those books. And the process of doing that is like, oh, Bob Dylan is clearly reading these books, the mood and the tone. They're just, it's like an alternate, you know, type of that landscape, and it's an emotional landscape. I think about the production of Time Out of Mind is something that Rollins talks about in interviews. He was a big Time Out of Mind fan, and the notion that he didn't recognize his own voice within that is amazing to me, because there's some of these lines are specific, but he writes a lot. He'd moved on to other stuff, and it just never clicked. And I let him know years ago. I emailed me back, and he's certainly hip to the fact that this is going on. And I think he just chooses not to address it publicly. And he's a guy who will tell you about what things he's interested in musically. I mean, he's endlessly in every documentary as a talking head. Or, you know, he loves Black Sabbath. He gets to go to the Black Sabbath reunion rehearsals and be a reporter on the field. I mean, he's a guy who will take the time to do that. But I think the notion that his writing played such a role in the tone of Time Out of Mind and the language of that and Into Love and Theft, and that he's clearly, Dylan's clearly reflecting on this writing. And you can see it makes sense. They're road diaries. Bob Dylan's been on the road for the last 30 years and he knows what being on the road is like. And here's a guy writing about being on the road and touring and those pieces that he can relate to. And also, how do you find a character to inhabit? Now, the notion that Bob Dylan is speaking first person to you in those songs, I think people is a mistake people make. And so how do you find characters to inhabit? And I think he found part of that in the writing of Henry Rollins. So for me to read those books, they're prose, they're poetry, they're tour diaries. It's a mix of different things. For me, it just opened it up. I wouldn't have thought of, you know, reading that book, those books that way. So I've got a whole another frame of reference for Time Out of Mind that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah, it's the same way that musicians like Dylan expose us to other songwriters by doing something as explicit as a cover. And then that becomes part of what their fans are aware of and learn about. What's the highest percentage of found pieces in any song? Meaning the ones I know about, this is kind of a spice in the song. It's not like these songs are either entirely cut and paste or are come from somewhere else. It seems more like there was a song and this line helps here and this line helps there. You see what I'm getting at? If you yellow highlighted sure. all the words in a song, most of the ones I've seen, you're talking about 5-10% of the words. It's not like it's entirely made up of at least identified components. Is that correct?
You know, I think there's a mix and it depends. For instance, in Trying to Get to Heaven, the Lomax book has got lines from 4 spirituals and 2 wheels, 6 lines that are there that are suggested. And I think the suggestion Mike Daly made, it nails it. He was looking at this book. So that's 6 lines there. Then he's got a line from Rollins and the line from the Johnny and Jack song. So you got 7 lines within that song. Tweedledee and Tweedledum is one that I think is really loaded with a range of different things because it's got a whole series of lines from songs recorded by the New Lost City Ramblers and Mike Seeger of the Ramblers that are there. He's also incorporating bits from a travel guide for New Orleans, where he's got dripping with garlic and olive oil, or the multi-$1,000 gown line. The line, a lot of things they'd like but would never buy, is actually that travel guide quoting a passage from a Lillian Hellman memoir. And Lillian Hellman is writing about her aunts in that, her spinster aunts. She goes and buys stuff at the grocery store, at the deli, that they would never buy for themselves. And it's up to the ellipsis in that excerpt that's in the travel guide. So he's got those pieces going on. He's quoting the Hilton sisters, the conjoined twins who appear in the film Freaks. One twin says to the other, her master's voice is calling. There's all these hidden twins in the song. So there's some where it's, especially on Love and Theft, it really starts to stack up. And I think even in the example I pointed out with Mark Twain and Rollins in Lonesome Day Blues, people spotted the Mark Twain line easy because you can Google that, because people are really familiar with the adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And you can find copies of that everywhere. But they didn't recognize that the other component of that is from Henry Rollins because it was just too obscure to be able to watch. So I think you get that. You see that in like the easy line to spot is the F. Scott Fitzgerald line in that Time Out of Mind song, but people don't spot the adjoining verse has got a line from the last sentence of chapter 4 of The Sun Also Rises. So it's Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald back to back. I think there's still pieces like that that aren't recognized. So I think we see it start to grow in Time Out of Mind. There isn't as much, but certainly if you've got 7 lines right there in Trying to Get to Heaven. I also think there's the notion of the stories that he's telling, where what is Dylan reading and how is he making that go across? That whole, what Rollins writes about wanting to trade places with those people that are in the bright colored clothes. In Chronicles, Dylan writes about Hemingway notion of telescoping ideas, and you might be able to get it into one paragraph or into one verse of a song if you could get it right. And I think that's one of the things that's in play in that verse in Highlands. You read that Rollins piece, go, that's a great story. I know what it's like to want to be able to trade those places with those people. How can I make that telescope down into a verse of a song? So sometimes it's more of an indirect inspiration for that, that you can spot for that. So I think it's certainly greater than 10% in a number of those songs and from such a range of sources that sometimes it's difficult to spot some of them. They're interlaid and sometimes from obvious and sometimes from more obscure sources. So I think there's still a lot of mapping out to do.
I think your other point about things like F. Scott Fitzgerald and widely recognized lines being used does suggest he knew people were going to notice. They might not notice the obscure stuff, but he's not trying to hide the fact that it's going on. And I don't think there's any, you know, reason he should, but if he wanted to try to hide, it would be all obscure sources. And clearly these aren't. So that's, you know, he clearly doesn't have any problem with it. And I don't think we should.
No, I don't think so either. And I think he announces it with, you know, the title of Love and Theft. It, you know, it's a reference to a book on the minstrelsy, but it's also, here's the modus operandi. These are things I love that I'm going to steal and repackage in an effective way. And he just does it so brilliantly. And for me, I was really thinking of Love and Theft as the starting point moving forward. And I was looking at that material. And then in 2009, when I saw those Mind Polluting Words, Dreamless Sleep pieces, I was like, oh, I've got to backtrack. I totally miscalculated Time Out of Mind and I had to reconsider it entirely. And which was a richly rewarding process to sit and go through and, oh, let me take a look at these songs the way I was looking at those Love and Theft songs. And it certainly pays off. I'm much richer for having read all these books, listening to that music and thinking about, how do you write like that? Like, how do you, you know, one of the notions is, how do you write a Bob Dylan song? That I think about is like, and how do you get that to go on? How do you write those late period songs? If you can consider the mid 90s late period. And I can really see that new style and approach, you know, blossoming in Time Out of Mind in a way that I initially didn't see at all.
Well, it's clearly a fascinating part of what he's doing and a really interesting thing for us all to find additional ways to enjoy. I think most of us would not have found a tiny percentage without you specifically and some of your compatriots who work on this. So A, thank you from the Dylan community for what you've exposed us to. And thanks specifically to you for coming today and sharing this research, additional research on Time Out of Mind and pulling this all together for us.
Well, I appreciate it. I do this because it's fun to do. And it still remains fun to do. And I appreciate having the conversation. And I really like what you've got going on here with this series. So thanks for having me.
Don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast. It really helps. For bonus episodes and more, become a member at freakmusic.club/join. And you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at FMC_Dylan. Thanks for listening.